Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
In my almost 27 years doing the show, I promise you I have never introduced a segment this way. I want to talk about rats. One morning, I get up, or no, actually in the middle of the night, I'm hearing scratching in the walls. This is about a month ago. And I come into the kitchen and I see some, what I thought were mouse droppings, because they were little. Long story short, it's been a month-long battle. I've lost. $2,000 later, I've still lost. I wake up this morning, and this guy, Brandon Hallows, great guy, carpenter guy, he had gone and sealed up what we thought was the very last place they might have gotten in. In the middle of the night, the dog wakes up barking. I don't see anything. Wakes me up again in the middle of the night barking. I don't see anything. And I wake up this morning, I go to the corner of the piece of, you know, where he laid on this 8-foot piece of wood, and rats have gnawed through the corner of the wood. The guy is here. I am not here to dress him, or whatever it is called, redress. Now, what's the word? Dress him down, yes, for his good, bad work, because he did a great job. I'm here because when he's been back to my place a couple times now. He told me his story. And this is a guy who, as a kid, was regularly beaten by his dad. It's like me, too, except it was my mom who did the beating. And as a teen, he got himself too involved in raves and in the drug scene. He ended up homeless. One day when he was really high on mushrooms, he pictured himself blue, dead. That scared him, and he decided to, I think I'll stop right there. He's here to tell the tale. Brandon Halliwell, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you very much, Marty. I really appreciate being here. Beautiful Sunday afternoon coming up in here. So I had a little bit of a troubled childhood, I'd say.
Let's start at the very beginning. You actually had problems before you got into drugs. They held you back in kindergarten. Why'd they do that?
Yeah, I was actually I was a little bit of a nuisance. I'd started a year earlier than most of the kids, and I ended up getting held back because I had a little bit of a temper when I was younger. So I'd been playing around on a tricycle for, probably the entire recess. We're supposed to only have little five minute spurts on it at that point, but the kindergarten teacher came over to try and take it from me, and I ended up getting a little too physical with her to the point where I basically bit her ankle. So they said that they didn't feel like I was ready to be there. They ended up holding me back another year because of that, in fact. And so, it was definitely a start to a very, very long life.
Educational career.
Yeah, there you go. Educational yes. career.
And then it wasn't too long before they put you on ADHD medication, Ritalin, Adderall, all the rest of them. What was that like?
It was definitely different. I didn't like not being in control of myself. The Ritalin was probably the worst out of all of them. Adderall worked, but it just the side effects were just killing me.
Like what?
Well, I know with Ritalin, I had lethargic. I was very lethargic. With Adderall, I was a zombie the majority of the time.
Wow. And yet, nevertheless, you got suspended a lot of times in elementary school. 115 days in one school year, all for fighting. Why'd you fight so much?
I got picked on a lot. I was the different kid. I was always smaller than everybody else.
He's huge now. The guy used to weigh you 6'5" or something?
Yeah. My sister is only 14 months older than me, and so she would always hang out with her group of kids, and I'd always try and hang out with her because I didn't fit in anywhere else, and it never worked. I always got picked on by them, and them picking on me pushed me. It turned into a push and shoving match, and that turned into me becoming physical, and that's literally all I knew. You know, I didn't know very much affection and all that growing up. My household was very, very violent. My mom and father divorced when I was two because my dad at one point had put my mom's head through a wall.
Wow.
So it was definitely a tough experience for me. So I didn't really know how to be affectionate any other way than throwing fists. It was definitely something else.
You're one of those examples. There's so many examples. Many people blame their current behavior as adults on what happened to their childhood. You know, here you are. You had the crap beaten out of you many times by your dad routinely. Your dad and mom were screaming, fighting, divorced before you can remember it, and you were living with your mom and all the rest of it. And yet, as you're going to hear, this is going to happen. This is a happy ending story. You know, I had that crap beaten out of me all the time. My parents are Holocaust survivors, and they ended up, like most of the Holocaust survivors, being quite well-adjusted. This notion, this Freudian notion that's now 100 years old of early childhood determining, you know, basically who you end up is, you know, is wrongly fatalistic. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree with it. And honestly, if it wasn't for that, I don't know that I would have turned out the way I did today.
Tell me about that.
The experiences that I went through were more or less just an outlined guide for me as far as being a father myself.
You mean that you want to, because all that crap happened to you, you want to make sure that you're going to be a good father?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I've had to reprimand my daughter through spanking maybe twice in her entire, she just turned 6 recently. Mm-hmm. And I'll stick her in the corner for something bad before I lift a hand at her ever. And it's just affection. It's the same as I look towards my relationships, patience, everything that I didn't have when I was younger, I've grown and adjusted to. Now.
Let's go, but let's stay. I like going the chronology route. Okay. So, you really weren't hyperactive, and you had a chance to prove it in the fourth grade. What happened in the fourth grade? A test.
So I had to take a test. Just they basically did an aptitude test on me to. Before we jump straight into that, what had happened was, because of all the suspensions and so forth, the principal at the time, which was newly appointed the year prior, so she didn't get the taste of me for the other 4 years, but she immediately tried to put me up for an expulsion board to try and get me removed from the New Haven school district that I was currently staying in. And obviously my mom fought, and that failed. And then they tried putting me up towards the actual school board, not just in New Haven, but just saying that I should be homeschooled, if anything.
Wow.
And obviously that got overturned as well, and so her only other alternative was, well, I need to get this guy out of here. What can I do? You know, he's really smart. His test scores are super high. He never does his homework. Oh, sounds like he's smart, but he doesn't need to be. He needs to be somewhere else. And so they ended up giving me the aptitude test. And I scored in the 98th percentile for that. So I literally had 2% of the entire population of California score higher than I
had. And as a result of that, they skipped you from the 5th to the 7th grade.
Correct.
And that made you stop fighting. How come?
I had no time. I had no time to deal with other people. I was too busy worrying about schoolwork. And I didn't have that confrontation. I was too busy trying to stay ahead of the groove that I didn't have time to hang out with kids during lunch. I didn't have time to do any of that stuff. I was always had my head in the books because I had that opportunity to learn now.
But you had a mixed experience in high school, but because this show focuses on career, I'm going to try to fast forward some of the stuff. But
yeah.
A key moment was after graduating high school, you met a girl who you called super cute but a wrong girl, and she got you into drugs. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that happened shortly after my father actually passed. I ended up moving in with my mother, and therein I basically ran into a girl my first couple weeks there, and she was a real bad raver chick. She liked to go out and party and pop ecstasy all the time, and so I ended up hanging out with her a little too much, and I was free to do whatever I wanted to at that point. My mom was always working nonstop. It was just me, so I made all the wrong decisions then, which I'm glad for, because, you know, that was my earlier years. I literally just gotten out of high school, so I'd rather have done it then than now, I would say.
I was amazed, you know, there was a phrase that when you told me the story. You said you got so used to doing drugs, you didn't even think you were doing them. You were just having fun.
Exactly. You know, the second the high would start to dissipate, you'd pop another pill, or you know, you'd eat some more mushrooms or anything. I didn't get into anything too serious. I never did methamphetamines, cocaine. I think I attempted once, and I honestly don't even remember what it felt like because I was probably on other drugs when it happened.
Wow.
But I made sure to stay away from anything that would do anything to my actual body as far as features wise. And I know methamphetamines are the first thing to start eroding. Yeah. So.
And of course, you couldn't afford your own apartment. You just had some part-time jobs like delivering pizza at Little Caesars or whatever. But so you had to keep living with your mother. But she got tired of your drug abuse finally, and she kicked you out. So where'd you go?
I started jumping house to house. I was living with friends that I'd met while I was there starting, and then I realized that it wasn't their problem that I was homeless. And I took it upon myself to say, screw it, I don't want to burn any bridges. I'm going to go elsewhere. And I found an abandoned U-Haul repair garage that was in the area that had been abandoned since I'd been there. And it showed no signs of activity. So I ended up squatting over there, and I actually used some of my carpentry and so forth while I was there to get it functional so that I actually had hooked into the power supply and all that, and everything was going great. As far as being on my own over there, I was still able. I still had an ample amount of water. I was able to take a shower every day. You know, I had the lights on. I had the AC going in the place.
How'd you get a shower going over there?
So I had the water turned on. The way I did it is I had a church right next to me, and they had a hose that I hooked up to the hose bib in the back part of the place, and that allowed the water to pass through the entire building, then allowing me to take a shower, and I'd obviously turn it off after I was done.
Right.
So
that was, certainly you're still doing drugs at that point.
And
then one day when you were really high on mushrooms, as I said in the intro to the show, you saw yourself blue, dead. And you said that scared the hell out of you. So what'd you do? No, you know what? Let's let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Brandon Hallowell. He is a guy who's my rat control guy. And in the course of him doing the work, he told me his story, and he's got really interesting career lessons for you. But I wanted to set the stage. This is not a kid who was born a silver spoon in his mouth. I will probably... at some point, you know, I think I will in a few minutes give out the phone number, and you can ask him a question. So if you're, you know, listen to this stuff, and when we get to the career part, finish the most of the career part, we'll invite you to, we'll take a call or two. But in the meantime, okay, so you saw yourself blue, you saw yourself dead, you were high as a kite on mushrooms, and so what did you end up doing?
I decided at that point that I needed to turn my life around. I didn't want to be that figment that I had seen, and I didn't know if it was my father trying to tell me what, you know, give me a hint, give me a sign or what. But I knew that something had to change, and there had been the military patrolling around the area day after day. My morning rituals were always just to go to Starbucks, hang out with whoever I could there that wasn't doing anything with their lives either. And every single time I'd be over there, I'd always get stopped by the Marines. They were the most persistent ones, I swear. Huh. Which was funny because when I was in high school, I used to brag that that's what I was going to do. I was going to go into the military, and when I first attempted it, it didn't work successfully, but that's a story for another day. and the good thing was that there was one guy in particular, super, super persistent, who ended up being my recruiter. He had just gotten into recruiting, and so I was his very first, what we'd call poolie, somebody who signs up. But I'd walked into his office, and I told him, I said, hey, look, and his name was Sergeant Pasalis. I was like, Sergeant Pasalis, if I score above 98% on your test, I will join. And they have a pre-aptitude test for them as well.
It's called the ASVAB.
It's called the pre-ASVAB.
Okay.
And I walked straight out of there screaming way above the 98%. It was, I think he said it was like a 90, it was like a 98.7 or a 98.8. And I had no prior testing. Normally people sit there and test up for the ASVAB. So I jumped on that. That was in October of that year. By December I was already gone. I was already shipped out for boot camp over in San Diego.
And so normally when you score high, that gives you some choices of what you do. So
correct.
That was your first career. What choices did you have?
I honestly, he opened the book and said, point to what you want.
Wow.
And I told him that I was really into computers. My father, growing up, worked on computers all the time, and as much of an abusive person as he was still somewhat of a, he was the only father figure role model I had. And he worked for a company called Cassie that isn't around anymore. It's Microsystems. And so I would watch him tear apart computers and rebuild them all the time, do networking. And so I wanted to do that. Okay. And he said, well, you're in luck because I have a spot with another recruiting station that needs to fill it so that they can send him to boot camp now. So I'm putting you on it right away.
But how the hell you ended up in Iraq and Afghanistan? Well, you go from computers to Iraq and Afghanistan.
So what happened was I was in there, and then I found out after I got out of boot camp that I was non-deployable. My unit was non-deployable. I was non-deployable.
Deployable, meaning you're not...
I was not...
Why were you not... Why were you not deployable? And were you happy or sad about that?
No, I wasn't... I thought that I would have been happy, but the mentality of breaking you down and building you back up in boot camp gave me that sense of accomplishment that I've done this. I want to see what else I can do. And that became my actual addiction. You know, it became that, how far can I push myself? Huh. And so... I asked them, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to change this course? I want to deploy. I want to do something for the country. Huh. I've done so much bad stuff. I want to do something that makes me feel like it's good. And they said, well, we have to do a lat move for you. And a lat move is basically you change your military occupation, but then you have to go through schooling again. And the only thing that they had readily available at that point was counterintelligence.
Oh, okay. So, I want to ask about that.
Yeah.
Tell me, is there anything that would have surprised me about boot camp?
What do you mean by surprise?
Something that doesn't everybody knows it's hard, everybody knows it's highly structured, you know, do a lot of push-ups, you know, 3-minute showers, all the rest, everybody knows that. Is there anything that might surprise me about, you know, or surprise our listeners about what boot camp was really like?
Yeah. It's basically like owning your own apartment, but having 35 roommates. You know, you have to make sure that they hold you accountable for everything. You have to make sure that everything's proper, tidy. You have to make sure that you do all of your laundry. And it's all hand washed. There is no dryers. There is no washing machine. You hand wash every single article of clothing every single week.
Okay, so now you got deployed.
Yeah.
So what, again, all I can think of in deploy is a bunch of guys waiting for crap to happen, and then you get scared occasionally and whatever. What might surprise me about what happened during your deployment?
I can't talk too much on the majority of them. A big thing that does happen is we have a big scare for malaria while we're overseas, so you have to take malaria pills. And those malaria pills also cause hallucinogens. Oh. So I remember being on a convoy one time. We're rolling down the strip, and we're going from place to place. I can't necessarily tell you where, but... I'm up on the high rise. I'm sitting on the top where the turret is, and we're just driving along. And next thing I know, I see what looks to be a mattress in the distance. And so, you know, we have to watch out for IEDs, improvised explosive devices. And so, a big thing that I was doing was sitting there scouring. I'm like, hey, there's something up in front. Other guys are looking. Nobody sees anything. Finally, we get over to the area, and there's nothing there. And I'm, what the heck, you know? Not even 4 minutes down the road, we get hit by an IED. So, I mean, and they're everywhere, honestly. Luckily for us, we were in an armadillo. It's an AMRAP.
So AMRAP, I don't know what that means.
Well, it's an armored vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Has an armored undershell. So we were lucky enough to survive it, but that's the biggest scare that's over there. I mean, there's nothing that wouldn't surprise you. The news tells you everything that's going on over there. You just don't have to deal with any of the actual physical harm.
Did the highly rigid structure of the military, for some people that helped, it helps them. For some people, it hurts them. Some people just one big annoyance. What was the impact of that highly structured existence? And is it as highly, first of all, is it as highly structured as the stereotype is?
It is, in a sense. Sometimes you end up in the wrong unit, and sometimes that unit's ran by a bunch of children. Obviously, the farther up the chain you go, the longer that you've been in. So you have some of the older men farther down the road. But I remember I was in there with some 22-year-old sergeants. I was in there with some with a 19-year-old that was in charge of, you know, 9 or 10 junior Marines, so lance corporals and so forth down. But
did it help you, hurt you, neutral?
Both. I think that it helped as far as making all my insecurities disappeared, and also it helped because I became more mature being there, more responsible. It hurt me in the sense that everything became way too easy.
How do you mean?
Well, I started, you know, it's competitive nature being in the military. So the whole time that I'm in the military, I'm being competitive with everybody. So eventually you become real good at a lot of things, you know, sports and so forth. My thing was computers. And then following that was interrogating. And the computers, literally, I just started being a master at it. I went out, I got all my certifications I could. At one point, I had 27 certifications.
But you said it was going to, it hurt you. I was asking, so how does that hurt you?
But the reason that it hurt me is because it made me feel like I could have anything I wanted to for when I got out, which wasn't the case.
I see. Now, interrogation, again, because the show's about career. What are some rules of interrogation? First of all, you know, here, especially in the Bay Area, we tend to focus, when we hear the word interrogation, for many people, the first word we hear is waterboarding, you know, going too far. What's the truth about interrogation? You did interrogations. Yeah. What is the truth, again, without violating any laws, but the truth about the way in which interrogations actually occurred? Yes, stop there. I'll stop there.
So interrogations generally... the majority of them are hands-off for the most part. Occasionally, we come into those very, very important, we have to get information out of this guy cases. Body mutilation is out of the question. That doesn't happen. Waterboarding doesn't happen. The only time that waterboarding will happen is if you're higher up on the pay grade and your classification is a lot higher probably. I never ran into it. Do I agree with it? On some cases, I feel like it would have saved me a lot more time if we would have gotten down and just done it. But it's just it's inhumane. I've seen the videos from it. The general routine would be to call them in. Sleep deprivation was our biggest method. You just sleep deprive them, but in sleep depriving them, you sleep deprive yourself. So what we do is we'd have ourselves and two other people just there to keep them in motion, keep them awake. So I can catch, you know, an hour and a half of sleep, and it that benefited me now, because now I can literally sleep for 2 hours and I feel like I slept the whole night.
How likely, you know, again, I'm sounding like a Bay Area person. You know, when you're sleep depriving is not fun at all.
No.
How sure were you that this person really was a bad man or woman before you subjected him or her to that?
Not at all. I had no idea what they had done. I was given a list of questions to.
But do you know how carefully the boss, the person who gave you the order to interrogate that person, do they, you know, could this just as be, you know, is a quarter of the time was the person just an innocent nothing, you know, a person, not I mean nothing, an innocent person, or are they really, is there reason to presume that they were wearing some explosive thing or whatever?
Oh, no, there's no doubt that they had done something.
Oh, okay, like what? I'm trying to get a sense of what those.
Well, I know that. All right, so I know that one person that we had picked up for interrogation was attempting to enter the COC. It was the COC is the command center.
Okay.
We had one person that was trying to break line and rush to the front. Well, we have a check-in process.
Who was not one of your soldiers. Some other person tried to break through your line of soldiers to get into the command center.
Somebody had broken in to try and get into the base. They look like they're in quite a hurry to get into the base. We've had issues where guys were in trucks rushing towards the base and wouldn't stop when we're shouting stop.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, there's a couple. I never ran into anybody that I had even the slightest thought. Didn't have some crucial information.
So it wasn't like he just walked into the street and took somebody who looked funny.
No.
Okay. Tell us, you know, we are all in many ways, whether you're an employer or an employee, we often interview people. We often try to get information from people. What are some practical, I'll start with one thing, what's one practical thing about interrogation that we might all use as we, in the course of our work lives, are asking, trying to obtain information from people?
Hand gestures are a big one.
What do you mean?
So generally when somebody is feeling uncomfortable, they'll start using their hands a lot.
Come on, I use my hands all the time.
That's just you, Marty. You're a talker. That's your personality. No, normally you'll see them start fidgeting. They'll start rubbing their hands together. They'll start playing with their a lot of times you'll see them take their thumb and they'll be pressing their thumb against the sides of their hands. You'll feel them rubbing their palms. Sometimes they do the exact same thing repetitiously, so you'll see them, you know, curl their hair, for example. That's a big thing to keep an eye out for. The other thing is their eyes.
Tell me more.
So somebody who is to the point is, you know, answering questions with generally somebody answers a has to think before they answer a question, so you can tell when they've staged themselves for an interview, for example. If somebody answers a question within 0.4 seconds, then generally it's staged. The for me to respond to you, it takes an average of about a second, second and a half.
Really? I think it seems like you've been in, I'm always, you notice I'm right on. I'm always interruptive. Yeah. I'm right on. So isn't that risky to judge that?
Yes, but no. I mean, you have to think that while I'm speaking to you about this, you're already thinking you're already two steps ahead of me. So you already know what I'm going to finish saying before you start saying. So technically you are still taking that second and a half.
But how could you see that then? Anyway, let's not go there. Let's move ahead to. So, is there anything else before we leave your military experience? Again, the show's about career. What else, if anything, that would be not obvious? Do you want to tell our listeners? Because here in the Bay Area, especially, and well, in parts of the country, but there are many people who would never dream of going into the military, even if they had a crappy life. Or the parents who would do everything possible. Your mother, you know, didn't want to let you in the military. Is there anything more you want to talk about the military, either as a launch pad for a career or as a life or as a career? Anything that's not obvious you want to tell me about the military as a career,
honestly,
or as a job, as a launch pad?
No, there's not really too much. I mean, anything that you want to know about the military is pretty open. It's really an open book. You can find anything about it. You can find out about, like, I used it for schooling after I got out. It helped me straighten up my life, and I've talked to several others that were in there that were in the same down the same path. But it isn't for everyone. It's the strong heart. You have to be real strong in heart, and your patriotism. If it wasn't through the roof by the time you go in, by the time you leave, it is. It's literally.
What's one example where you had to be strong of heart?
Oh, I had to be strong and fired almost the entire time, Marty. I was, you know, even going in there, I was still a rebel throughout boot camp. We call it IT. It's called intensive training. I was on the quarter deck, which is smack dab in the middle of everyone being IT'd every single day.
What's that mean?
The mountain climbers, push-ups, crunches, sit-ups, jumping jacks, which we call side straddle hops. But the second I said that, everybody goes, what?
Right.
But no, the you name it. You know, at one point I had to hold my rifle over my head for about an hour and 10 minutes.
Wow. Now, why? How? What was an example of something you did that made you get that punishment?
Oh, talk back. Right off the bat, you know.
For example.
Oh, no, they would. I wouldn't say sir, yes sir, or I would blatantly cuss at them on purpose. But I still had the street side of me. I guess you could say. Involved at that point.
Okay. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Brandon Hallowell. He was a guy who's my rat controller, trying to help me solve my rat problem in my house. But I got to hear his story, and it was so, you know, and I rarely do this, as you know, those of you who listen to the show regularly, but his story is so good with so many twists and turns, and you haven't heard them all yet. I have to have him on the show. So, all right, now you're out. You leave the military. You complete your service. How long were you in the military?
I was in the military for 6.5 years.
Wow. Okay. What'd you do when you got out?
I started school. I met my beautiful girlfriend, Ashley, after I got out, and then...
Who is here right now? She's very shy, but she's sitting here looking at him fondly. Continue.
And then, so I went into schooling, and I went into schooling for computers. So I went in and did a computer science major, figured that's what I wanted to do. I was just go back into programming and all that, because obviously coming out, interrogations aren't a strong suit unless you're trying to be a CIA operative or something.
Why didn't you want to, I mean, you always, I watch too much TV, but I think of hostage negotiators. Why didn't you just become a cop or something?
I thought about it. I thought about the cop route. I thought about the firefighter route. I went through all those steps thinking about, you know, what would be the best route for me to take. And I didn't want to get reinvolved myself in something that was at that level of a brotherly commitment. It has that brother in arms commitment, and I lost several guys while we were overseas, so I didn't want to fall into that category again. But I didn't do interrogations because honestly, I grew to not like it. midway through. And so,
how come? What didn't you like about it?
My very first interrogation, I got sick. I threw up my first one, and I didn't like the person I was becoming, because everything was becoming faint to me. Death didn't bother me, it got to the point where everything was numb. Pain was numb. So I was like, that's not the me I want to be for my daughter. And at this point, my daughter had already been born. So, I said computers is the way to go. If I ever go back up to Northern California, because I was in Southern California at the time, going back up to Northern California, I have Silicon Valley. They need programmers all the time. That's the way to go. And through schooling, I told myself that's what I was going to do. Got out and I was all, I don't want to do this.
How come?
The redundancy behind it just...
What do you mean?
Kicked my butt. Whenever you go to do program something, you never get to see the benefits from it. You never get to see the repercussions that come off.
You're a cog in the wheel, and you just could do your little subroutine,
and then all that routine that you just did disappears.
Okay.
And somebody else takes credit for it or something else. And I didn't like that. I like being very visual. I'm very aesthetic when it comes to, hey, I'm helping you. This is what's going to happen. I just decided that wasn't the route for me. I jumped into plumbing. Shortly thereafter, did plumbing for about 8 months, got my hand back into that, had a bit of a dispute with the owner.
Before we get to that, now, it was really interesting. You told me that you had no real experience as a plumber. You got in, and within 8 months, you were a supervisor, and you were started as a plumber assistant, then you were a plumber with no real apprenticeship or whatever, and then you were a plumbing supervisor. I've learned over the years as a career counselor that while most people like to have their ducks in a row and they got to go through the formal apprenticeship, it's a four-year formal apprenticeship to be a plumber, that really, that while 90% of people do things a traditional way, there's always 10% of people who do it on the job. How did you go about getting the job? What lessons are there for my listeners about how to get to a more responsible career without having to go the long school route?
Okay, so my biggest thing to say would be I walked in for my interview in a suit.
All right. And for a plumbing assistant job.
For a plumbing job, and I walked in a suit, and there were 6 other guys there. 3 of them were wearing board shorts.
What's a board short?
Board shorts are... So if you're going to do like wakeboarding, or we'll just say swimsuit trunks, basically.
Okay.
Board shorts. But there was 6 guys in there. At least 3 of them were wearing shorts. One of the guys was wearing a wife beater, is what they're called. It's a tank top, basically.
But those white T-shirts,
yes,
like
exactly.
With the little ribs in them.
Yes. So one of them was wearing that with an open button shirt. And one of the guys was in there looking. He looked like a hoodlum. He literally had his hat sideways, and so my competition didn't seem very, very fitting
visually,
for me.
Right?
And so I was the last one to go, but I walked in, and immediately he goes, first of all, let me just say, wow. He's all, I've been doing this for 25 years, and I've had one guy walk into my place wearing a suit, and that's you.
So you were trying to show that you were trying to take it seriously.
It's professionalism. That's my biggest thing is professionalism. If you're not professional, if you can't make yourself believe that you're professional, then how is somebody else supposed to take you seriously?
Let me tell you, this is another takeaway. It's really true. This guy, for those of you just joining us, this guy ended up being my guy who was my pest control carpenter, fixing holes and stuff like that. He was supposed to come 9:30 the first time. He was there at 9:20. He was supposed to come 9:30 the second time. He was there at 9:20. He was here for the radio show. He was supposed to be here at 10:45. He was here at 10:30. The guy is, it sounds so shallow and so silly, but a hell of a lot of people are not responsible like that. They say they're going to be at 9:30. We all know the repair guy's supposed to come about 9:30. He's feeling like he's on time if he's there at 10 o'clock. Okay. Not Brandon. Kid, as silly as it sounds, dudes and women and anybody who's listening to this, that crap matters. Continue.
Yeah, no, that you're 100% right, Marty. It's the way I look at it is smooth is fast and fast is smooth, but it's slow that is fast in reality.
Tell me what you mean by explain that.
All right, so slow is fast and fast is smooth is how the saying should have been. And the reason behind that is because as long as you prioritize and you lay things out and do it right the first time, mm-hmm. then it'll be done. But in the same scenario, the way I look at it is if you're on time, you're late. for me, being in the military, we were always told 15 minutes prior, mm-hmm. regardless of what you do.
There's an infinite number of things that can go wrong, and only one way things can go right. So if you allow a little bit of cushion of time, you're going to be on time.
So perfect example, if I leave 15 minutes prior and all of a sudden I realize that I'm not going to make it on gas and I have to fill up my gas tank, I have no worries. Not to mention, I arrive over here, I can now set everything up. I can get my tools and all that set up. I can get everything prepared.
That's
and
what
ready.
You did.
And I can walk.
That's exactly
walk
what
right
you
into
did.
The door.
So okay. So how did you go from other than being professional? How did you go from being plumber assistant who came in for the interview as in a suit, to in 8 months being the plumber who, when somebody called, you were the guy they sent out to do the job, and then you supervised five guys.
It wasn't even sending me out to do the job. I ended up getting to stay in the office and dispatching everybody.
Oh right.
It started off, you know. I started off slow. I worked with the boss's kid, actually. And then about 2 months into it, I started showing initiative. I was, any single time he called and needed help, even if it was my day off, I'd go in. Mm. There was one point where I was supposed to work night shifts, and I was sleeping during the day, and he called me and said, "Hey, I'm short of man. I really need help with something." So I jumped on it. I went to go help him. That took what was thought to only be a two-hour job. Took 8.5 hours, and I immediately had to drive back to work to pick up a company truck just to drive out to the night shift now. And so I was on shift for 16 hours plus had to drive home.
Now, there are many people who would say that that's abusive of the worker and is unfair, and they would file a grievance,
yes,
and et cetera. What's your response to that?
So, yes, I you know, did I feel it was unfair? At times I did, but I knew that by biting the bullet and just accepting it, that it would only help me to advance sooner. The downside to it for me was obviously the how dangerous it became for me, because in that scenario, you know, if I'm running on, you know, 16 hours of work, not really any sleep, then it's sleep deprived. For me, it was
unhealthy. Well, it's not fair to a human being.
For me, it was a different scenario. He knew my military background. I willingly stayed out there. He called me several times and said, you know, are you okay to do this? And obviously I stepped up to the plate and said, yeah, I'm fine.
I see.
At any point.
So it wasn't any force. You really, no. He checked in with you and gave you opportunities
exactly,
to back out.
Exactly.
But you ended up with a dispute with him, and then.
It was actually over money. That's the biggest dispute. I was starting to kind of resent the organization, because over time I was realizing how badly they were ripping not only their client the clients off, but how badly they were ripping off their employees.
Whoa! Let's be specific. Let's be a good consumer advocate. So, what do consumers need to be aware of, and what is he? Tell me what he did. What this guy did.
Perfect example is, you know, they're coming on in and they're charging $110 an hour for their employees to work on your property, but in reality they're only paying their employees $18 an hour.
Wow.
You know, that's not even a 25%
profit. That's an obscene, that's right. That's only, you know, my God, that's only 15% is what you
exactly.
got. That's a really not fair ratio. It really
and
isn't.
So it started kind of, it was, and then I started seeing too much favoritism in work since his son was working with him. We had one instance where his son had caught some stucco on fire outside the house, and the house went up in flame, or the garage panel had gone up in flames. And if it was any of us, we would have immediately been fired. But since it was his kid, mm-hmm. he stuck with him. And then not even a month later, his son got another raise for it. And we're kind of like, whoa, wait a minute, you know.
Yeah. So you had a dispute. There was a dispute in that area.
Yeah.
Then what did you do?
So I ended up leaving. I left. I didn't know what the heck to do for myself. And then my mother's boyfriend, who's also a Marine, and it's once a Marine, always a Marine. So that's why I don't like say ex-Marine or former Marine.
Why is that true? Now, I know I've heard it a million times. When you say once a Marine, always Marine, what's so powerful about being a Marine?
I guarantee you that if I was, for example, I saw an accident the other day. It was a couple of weeks ago right in front of my house, and my first instinct was to run over there. And mm-hmm. so I immediately booked it over, ripped the kids out of the car.
Wow.
Tried helping the lady out of the car, called the cops. One of the guys tried fleeing the scene, so I chased him down.
Wow.
You know, it's once a Marine, always a Marine. You always have that discipline. It's honor, integrity, and discipline.
Semper Fi, huh?
Exactly.
What is Semper Fi?
Always faithful. It's
faithful to what, really?
Oh, it's Semper Fidelis is what it is.
Right.
And so Semper Fidelis is always faithful to the country. always faithful to your beliefs, always faithful to the belief in the Marine Corps. So it's definitely a big part of me, and it's a big part of everybody else. I'll tell you right now that when I run into somebody, even when I'm at the bar with my girlfriend or something, for example, and I'm not a big drinker.
I know.
So when we go out, you know, she'll have fun, do karaoke or whatever, and the second I run into another brother in arms, me and him can sit there and talk as if we've been talking for years.
Now, I always like to take the other. There are many people who believe that the military is very bad for people because it denies them individual agency. They end up being blind, you know, blindly allegiant to a country that has done bad things. It teaches you not to think. It breaks you down and just makes you into a robot, into a war machine. What would you say to those people?
I'd say that their beliefs are their beliefs. Honestly, Marnie, obviously something happened in their life to make them feel that way, but from my personal perspective, I can't see that. You know, I dislike a lot of things that this country's done. I really do. There's a lot of things that we're dealing with now that I just don't agree with. Our politician race, which is something I'm just not going to get into.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, I can't believe that that's where we are.
I know.
And
I know.
You know, so I can agree with them on certain aspects of it, but all in all, I'm still me.
Right. Let's go back to the career thing.
Yeah.
So okay. So you left the plumbing thing. Then what did you do?
So I left plumbing, and I ended up working with a task for hire program. It's called TaskRabbit.
Right.
Now they started up in 2008. They've been around. They've only been expanding.
It's just like you go on the website and you need a gig done of any sort, and you can hire somebody who's like, you know, Upwork is for more technology things, and TaskRabbit is for things around the house and stuff like that.
It's for all kinds of stuff, Marty. It's an all-in-one shop. If you need cleaning, moving, building, whatever. So I thought, you know, that's right up my alley. I love working hands-on. And what better thing to do to keep me entertained than work with some new individual almost every single day?
Right.
And I was like, this is so right up my alley. And the cool thing is you set your own schedule, you set your own time.
Set your own hours. And you're not splitting it with anybody except the company. Yep. But the company, instead of ripping you off, charging $110 an hour and then paying you $18, you know, if you you on your first job, you get, let's say, and you set your rate at $55 an hour, which is what it was, which is a good, you know, that's a real solid living wage. And they get, for the first time you came to my house, they got 30%.
Correct.
But then afterwards only 15%. Yep. So it feels pretty damn honorable.
And it is. And you know, the cool thing about it is if you work with them enough, they get to the point where they start giving you money back on every single one of your jobs. So every single job, as long as you do a certain amount, they have different tiers that you can reach. Like right now, I am an elite tasker, which
I chose you.
Exactly. I popped up first on your list.
Yep.
But after doing 200 jobs in the same category, you become a platinum in that category. And what that does is that now means that as long as you do 30 of those jobs a month, which is one of those jobs a day, which isn't hard, I can do five of the same, you know.
Jobs are typically an hour.
Exactly.
Or two,
you know, a job will take me about an hour. Normally, I try and keep it at an hour for people. That way, they're only paying that $55 for something that would have taken them 2.5 hours
to do. Again, the guy is so ethical. He really was. He really, you know, none of this padding stuff, which, again, in the end, that's why he – what percent of your business is repeat business now?
My repeat business right now is at a 73%.
There you go.
Yeah, so.
There you go. Okay, so, all right. So that's why you did TaskRabbit. But now there's a lot of people who do TaskRabbit, who do Upwork, or, you know, just basically starving. Other than being professional, what have you make, now you make a six-figure income?
Yeah.
From TaskRabbit, period.
No, not just.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not just from TaskRabbit. I've started working for myself as well. I actually just recently received my commercial licenses for my vehicle, so I'm able to work for myself. I do a lot of 1099 work as well, and that pulls off of commercial companies through Silicon Valley, and that's off of TaskRabbit. That's my personal gigs, but those are all contracted, so those are a weekly wage. So I'm basically getting paid as if I was working in a 9-to-5.
I see. So some companies have hired you to do their commercial carpentry and things like that, and then you make some of your money. But, okay, so let's take those one at a time. What other advice do you have for somebody who's, whether they're doing TaskRabbit or Elance or whatever, any of those, which is unfortunately too often a race to the bottom?
Yes.
Because there's thousands of people there and only, you know, a very few elites with 55 stars. The rest of them are starving.
Yes.
Right? I know that's in the voiceover world. There's a million voiceover people. You know, only a tiny fraction are at the top of the heap. There are perfectly worthy, good people who are not top of the heap or in the middle of the heap. Or even, heaven forbid, at the 25th percentile of the heap. What advice do you have for a non-superstar? Where, you know, you scored the 98th percentile on an intelligence test. The Marines, in your case, straightened you out and made you extremely professionally responsible. What advice do you have for an average person trying to make a living at TaskRabbit?
I think my biggest thing for them would probably have to be that you're not as average as you think you are. You're only as average as you make yourself out to be. I've taken several of my employees, guys that work with me on a daily basis, that literally just worked tables. They didn't know, you know, a ballpoint hammer from, you know, a framing
ball
hammer.
Peen hammer, yeah. Dude. Get it right.
Sorry. Yes. But they didn't, you know, from a framing hammer, they didn't know how to use a sawzall. They don't know how to use a circular saw. And now I have one of them, you know, he's only been working with me for 4 months, 5 months on the regular, and I can send him out and have him do an immaculate job.
And I got to tell you, one of the guy you brought, and I'm not going to mention his name because I'm going to be, he is not the most prepossessing guy. He doesn't look very good. He doesn't really establish a lot of eye contact. He's very shy. And yet because he was a friend, you knew him from first grade.
Yep.
You took him under wing, and the guy, by the time he left, he wanted to work for nothing. He was just kind of keeping you, and I said, you've got to pay him, because yep. The guy was great.
Oh, of course, yes. Of course, no, we'll always pay him. It was more or less, he was happy to be learning is his thing. And that's how people have to be. You have to strive for the experience
Apprenticeship, that informal apprenticeship thing is so important. It was important to you as a plumber, important to these guys who are not superstars, but who are at least they have the right attitude. Is that all it is?
It's the can-do, you know, and that's the way I look at it. Just like for anybody can do anything to their house, any customization-wise, it's just that can-do attitude. It's the same thing with work. Anybody can do anything that they put their mind to. It's just that can't
within reason. I couldn't be an astrophysicist, and I could not, and I frankly could not be a carpenter. I'm really crappy spatially. I promised the listeners that I would give them an opportunity to ask you a question too. So you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Brandon Halliwell. He is the guy who's helped me control my rat problem, but his life story was fabulous, as you could see if you've been listening, a lot of real, practical, no BS lessons. If you've been listening to this and you have a question or a comment for Brandon Halliwell, this is your time. I only have time to take maybe one, maybe two calls, so this is your chance to do it. If you have a question or comment for a guy who I consider heroic, those of you listening to this show know that I really believe that the heroes of this country, of this world, are the people who work without prestige, in anonymity. They're never going to normally be on a talk show. They're never going to write books. They are the people who make America run, and I love them. I really have the highest respect for them. If you have a question, and maybe you want to disagree, maybe you want to agree, you want to have a question for Brandon Halliwell, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I'm pleased, before I even give out the phone number, they're calling. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you very much. The dynamic between you two gentlemen is fantastic.
I love it.
I don't know whether you sense that.
Oh, yeah. I'm really glowing. I love this guy. I love people like this. Yep.
What I particularly was drawn to was the fact that each of you respect the individuality of each person. Mm-hmm. When you raised the question, it had something to do, well, some people are against the military because they feel it makes them into robots, etc. And your guest, other people might have said or might have felt, oh, yes, or no, it doesn't, whatever. He said, everybody's an individual. I am who I am, and each person's an individual, and I wouldn't judge somebody else. And you have had the same attitude towards him. I just want to tell you, this has been one of the most educational and enjoyable interactions that I've ever heard on the radio.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling really great about it too. It's touching to me too. You know, I can. You know, you and I both. You're obviously a regular caller of the show. You and I both can be negative, and we can be critical. And it is such a relief to have a guest where I don't. I try to ask the hard questions, but where I'm not fighting against the conventional wisdom so much. I felt good being in sync with this guy instead of fighting the orthodoxy, which I spend most of my life doing.
Could I say one other thing?
Sure, of course.
I've listened for a long time, as you know.
Right.
I would appreciate knowing. I have a sense that you learn a tremendous amount in terms of practicing your profession from what you hear.
Of course. Of course. It's such a, you know, I do not get paid a penny from doing this. It actually costs me quite a bit of money to come, you know, to read the books, prepare, drive in, or whatever. I don't get a penny, and I would pay to do this. Station manager, don't listen. It's such a privilege to both be meeting these people, but also hopefully of being of some help. There is nothing. I mean, this is my life. I love it.
And would I be correct in feeling that in your profession, I mean, you're for what you get paid for, that's
right,
part
right,
of
right.
your
uh-huh.
professional activities,
sure.
that you also learn a great deal from what people tell you about their experiences and perspectives?
Of course. I mean, who gets, you know, people, my clients who are looking for jobs, they have to fight to get one informational interview with some manager or supervisor. I get to talk with people from all walks of life, from prostitutes to cleaning people to this guy who was a homeless raver and now he's a task grabber to some of the most brilliant, like I interviewed Peter Singer here, who was like this, considered that New Yorker called him the most influential philosopher alive. What a privilege. Give me a, because it affects my work. It affects my life.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for calling, as always. Okay, that's it. I'm going to give you one more. I got another call. Let's take another call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What is your question or comment for Brandon Halliwell?
My question is, I had a very similar upbringing.
Hmm.
And I find myself not being able to find work now.
Okay.
Do you want to tell me?
I'm on the air.
Yeah. Do you want to tell me about your situation and you know, because I'm a career, this is what I normally do with these workovers. I'm happy to do that. And if Brandon has something to chime in, he can. Do you want to tell me about your situation and see if we can be helpful?
Sure. I started in advertising, and then I found myself in San Francisco working in the tech world. Now, I can't seem to find anything at all. And I find myself becoming really depressed and despondent.
Of course, who wouldn't be?
Yeah.
But normally if you're open to everything, you're not going to be seen as really super qualified at anything. So let's pick one thing. If there was a goddess within you, the wise woman within you, who after these number of years, you know what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you like, what you don't like, where the market is. I mean, we all would like to be the next Oprah, but it ain't going to happen. What would you say should be your plan A target? What should your target job be?
I think it would be in creative concepting.
Not enough. Like concepts enough won't get you a job. Ideas are a dime a dozen. It's all of, you know, it's not, as Thomas Edison said, success is 5% inspiration, 95% perspiration. It's not enough to come up with ideas. Nobody's going to hire you to come up with ideas, period, because it's fun to come up with ideas, and it's easy.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, come up with something else, sorry.
Okay, design.
Design of what?
Design of websites, design of advertising, design of posters, you name it.
Okay, I'm seeing Brandon Halliwell shake his head and take a sigh of the sadness. Brandon, what's your reaction?
Okay, a big thing that I've seen, I have actually, you kind of hit home perfectly because one of the guys that I picked up that Marty was talking about not too long ago, that was his big thing. He went through Expressions College. He
and spent probably
$65,000 for his education,
right.
And he's been stuck trying. Before I picked him up, he was literally going from place to place. You know, just let me do something. Let me show you. And it wasn't getting him anywhere to the point where he ended up working over at Boudin's for the longest time, and he was a server there. And it's not what his life profession was. It wasn't what he wanted to do. I think that you seem like you're very, very comfortable around it's the creative aspect of things. So I don't know if you should so much lean towards the web design and so forth, but maybe, there's several other opportunities for you to look into. You can look into like do-it-yourselves, Etsy's, home programs, work, so forth, something just to get your name out there, because honestly, my first couple jobs for me, for example, I literally had to sit there and I had to deal with the $8, $9 delivery jobs, until I picked up my first clients. And once I got those first clients, that's when I got my foot in the door. And from there, it only expands.
Let's talk about some under the way. I agree with Brandon that you like the creating design thing. Websites are dead because there's so much, you know, except at the very high corporate level. Most people design their own websites. There are these templates. You don't need to, you know, to hire a web designer and pay a lot of money. So that's dead. Tell me more about what you... When I think about design that is not so overcrowded, and maybe it's because I'm looking at a guy who does home repair, it would be more like, designing a... redoing somebody's closets or doing their basement or their attic. Not kitchen, because, again, that's going to be more common. But some weird niche, an in-law apartments for the disabled, making a place disability-friendly, you know, knowing where to put the ramps and the grab rails and whatever. I'm not saying you should do that, but what's a less obvious, more under-the-radar kind of design that you could do?
That's a really good question. When you were talking about, like, doing things for the disabled, though, mm-hmm. it kind of made me feel happier. Like, there's more of a point to something.
Okay, so what I want you to do for starters, I want you to get a launch pad job, because right now it sounds like you've been unemployed for a while. There are stores that sell stuff for the disabled. That sell wheelchairs, that what they call durable medical equipment, that sell ramps, that sell, it's not just Home Depot, but specialty places. I want you to get a job, even if it's part-time, on Saturdays when it's busy or whatever, working retail so you could learn the products, learn the problems, learn the issues, make networking connections, and then see if in the course of that job, maybe somebody could say, you know, my apartment, I really can't get into my bathtub really well, and I don't know whether I should get one of those step-in tubs or this or that or whatever. You can be doing some design stuff there and see if that becomes a launch pad for something bigger, or maybe that's enough. What's your reaction to that?
That makes me feel really good, actually. I can see a future in that.
I will quit while I'm ahead, also because the show is essentially over. I thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, Brandon, so last quick question. You have only like 30 seconds. What's one piece of advice you have for somebody who's struggling? You were a druggie. You were homeless living in a U-Haul abandoned yard. You're now making six figures. You're hiring people. You are, use my technical term, a mensch. What's one quick tip you want to give to strugglers of any age?
Always keep your chin up. It's literally, as long as you keep your chin up and don't drop that head, then you'll always be able to push forward.
Well, you have certainly kept my chin up. As the caller had said, it was an inspiration to spend this hour with you. I expected to spend a half hour with you. I kept you on for the whole show.
Well, I appreciate it, Marty.
I know our listeners do.
It was amazing.
Hey, I should give you a plug. You know, really, you can, if people want to hire you to do carpentry, or you do carpentry, and is that mainly it, or is that?
No. I do several different aspects. A lot of my help is with moving jobs, honestly.
Okay.
I have my truck. I have all my people. But honestly, it wouldn't necessarily just have to be me. I mean,
okay. What's the website you want for your work? What's the website you want to give people?
I would definitely, or
email address. What do you want to give them?
Phone
number. What do you want to give?
We can do email would work perfect, and that would be Handy Hollowell, and that's Hollowell spelled Halliwell.
Handy, Handy, and then Halliwell.com. I got to go.
That's going to be at gmail.com.
At gmail.com. Perfect. Handy Hollowell at gmail.com. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, as usual, and all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers and a switch sides in the middle debate between my wife, Barbara Nemko, and me on the question of should government restrict the trend to ever more jobs being part-time temp like TaskRabbit. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.